Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins and Jedi. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
All right, Melanie, let's have it out right now. This is going to be a big discussion here.
Okay.
You claim that our boys, the now 10-year-old and the nearly 12-year-old, smell like fruit when you sniff their heads.
Like their hair.
Their
smells
hair.
Fruity.
See, okay, I sniff their heads. They smell like boy. What is this smell like fruit thing?
I don't know.
Why it's very strange, this idea that like that your kids you can smell a different scent on your children than I do. Is this a mom thing?
I have no idea.
I wonder if moms can smell, like, can they sense their children?
Well, I know that's true for like mothers of babies, like yes. Babies and moms, like newborns, like moms can often tell by smell, and so can babies, like
which one
is your baby? Like yes. This baby doesn't smell right, or when you're a mom of a newborn baby. And somebody else picks up your baby and they're wearing like perfume or something and you get the baby back and you're like, they don't smell right. It's just wrong. They smell wrong.
I know exactly what you're saying. When I open up my Amazon packages now and they smell like perfumey disinfectants.
Well, that definitely smells wrong.
It smells wrong. Put it outside.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like my friends who are moms of boys of about the same age are frequently complaining about their sons stinking.
But so our boys have this, the odor of sanctity.
I wouldn't go that far. The weird thing to me is we are a fragrance-free household.
Yes.
So when they wash their hair, they're using a
fragrance-free soap and shampoo and
soap
everything.
The only thing that they use that has like any smell, I mean, maybe, and this is it, like they use
the
a strawberry flavored toothpaste. And
ooh,
I don't think their head smells like the toothpaste, but
yeah, I mean, we have scent free fabric softener, detergent. Like we are a smell free family.
Right. And I mean, I've always kind of just sniffed the kids' heads since they were babies because like they do kind of just usually smell.
Well,
just,
then there's the chrism after the baptism.
Well, yeah, but I mean, just like the smell of them, like they smell like.
Yeah, I don't sniff them very much.
OK, it's weird, I suppose.
Well, it's a mom thing. I get that.
Right. But I've just noticed recently, like because I have been sniffing them like all their lives, I suppose. I just noticed recently that they kind of smell fruity and it's.
Yeah, when you give them a hug, you put your face into their hair and yeah. You can smell their hair. Yeah.
And like, why do you smell fruity? We don't have any like.
Yeah, my.
I mean, I used to use like apple shampoo before I became allergic to fragrances, and they kind of smell like that. Like
maybe it's apple-y. A sense memory.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Maybe if there's any science behind it, anybody knows.
I have no idea. Okay. It's a mystery.
Speaking of Anthony, we just celebrated Anthony's 10th birthday. That was this week.
I really can't believe it's been 10 years.
10 years. Yeah. What was it? We were remembering, oh my gosh, that's an easy word for me to say. We were remembering he was early.
He was.
So
he was supposed to be a planned C-section.
Right. Yeah, because Ben was scheduled. He was scheduled, but.
But I started having fairly regular contractions.
Several days before.
It was like 4 days before his due date, before his like official like scheduled date.
Which is
date.
Before the due date.
Right, because they always want you to like to get in there before you're actually going to start going into labor. So, yeah, it was like I remember waking up at like 3 o'clock in the morning thinking. These contractions feel kind of regular and they were never quite close enough like to be like. Call the doctor, go to the hospital. But they were definitely fairly regular, and that went on like
for hours.
For hours.
Because we didn't go till the evening.
It was a Saturday night when I first woke up feeling them, and we went to Mass on Sunday, and I just grabbed the priest after church and said, "You know what? I'm going to have a baby this week by C-section. Could you possibly give me anointing?" And he did.
Of course.
Of course.
Because Father Curry is good that way.
Right. So I had anointing, and I'd received communion, gone to Mass, and I had just recently gone to confession like a few days before.
So you were ready.
I was totally ready. And when I woke up at like 3 o'clock in the morning, like I had this little icon that a friend had given me, and I was just holding this icon of Mary and just saying, "All right, Mary, I don't want this baby to come right now. I'm a little bit nervous about this." So anyway, I sort of dragged all through Sunday just going.
And this was when your sister was living with us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just saying, "I really don't want this baby to come." And then finally, by Sunday night, I was just like,
"Call the doctor.
I think that this is not going away." And so we like had dinner and got the kids to bed. And then.
Although Bella said she remembers being awake and wondering where you and I were going.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, we went like as soon as they were in bed.
Yeah.
So we got the kids in bed, and then I packed my bag really quickly and we went to the hospital.
We were not prepared. Right. Did I stay all night?
Yeah. Well, so we got to the hospital around like, around eight. And they like.
I don't remember any of this.
Right. They're like, yeah, they put me on the monitor and they're like, yeah, you're definitely having some regular contractions here. And we think that we should not wait. And so they went ahead and the surgeon came in and started talking to me and the nurses, and we're doing all the like prep work and the questionnaires, like talking to the anesthesiologists and everything. And he was born before midnight. It was like 11:30 because he was right on that edge of like, is he going to be born on the 20th or the 21st? And it was the 20th.
Right.
And I don't think we actually got to a room until like 2 o'clock that morning. So it was a long night.
You know what I remember of of that experience was the CajunCrawfish.com. Well, in the midst of this, while I'm waiting for you, you know, to take care of your business, CajunCrawfish.com was online and it's like, "Hey, we need to, the mud bugs are ready and we need to test nationwide shipping. We'll send a free package to anyone, you know, to someone that will pick at random." And I said, "Hey, I would love to get some crawfish for free." And because, you know, right now my wife's giving birth to our son. And they're like, "Cool, we'll send it to you." And they included a little toy in it.
Included a little baby rattle. That was actually kind of cool.
That was awesome.
I don't think I actually got to eat any of them.
You never got any of those, though.
No.
Here's a picture. I'm pulling up a picture of me and Teresa, your sister, eating crawfish with the boys. The girls, I'm sorry. Not the boys, of course.
And the girls are making little crawfish.
Crawfish faces. Oh, my gosh. The pinchy face. Yes.
Yeah.
So that's what I remember of Anthony being born.
It was an adventure, and really, it's kind of typical of Anthony. Like, he is not the most patient person in the world.
Nope.
He could not wait.
He must have heard like something was going on and wanted to come out and see.
He was afraid of missing out.
I have never met anyone with a stronger case of FOMO than Anthony. Because if he knew we were talking about it right now, he would demand to come in and to hear it, because he just could not stand.
He was the cutest newborn baby. He had the biggest cheeks, like just big, fat, poofy cheeks.
Yes.
So cute.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then he grew and grew and grew. He was the fattest little baby.
He was the biggest of all of our kids.
And he basically sucked like, all of the weight off of you.
He was like 9 pounds when he was born, and he was about 25 pounds by 6 months.
He was like the Michelin man. He had rolls on rolls. It was amazing. I mean, now he's a slim, you know, little guy. He's still kind of a big kid, but he's not, he's not overweight or anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So Anthony's birthday. And so we got him, of course, got him a bunch of presents, some Legos. We got him a Lego TIE fighter from the, you know, the Force Awakens movies, like the new sequels. And then I got him a bucket of knockoff Chinese branded Legos, where he can make a whole bunch of like army trucks and stuff. And he loves it because it's like 8 or 10 different trucks he can build in it. And he's been building those all day. Then some Star Wars shirts.
Yeah.
Mando shirts.
A Mandalorian shirt and a Grand Admiral Thrawn shirt.
Yep. And a puzzle book. And
yeah, it's like a puzzles, optical illusion sort of thing.
Some stuff like that. So
some stormtroopers.
And you made him, he wanted a cheesecake.
He loves cheesecake. So he wanted a cheesecake with chocolate and raspberry swirls, which was a reprise of what I did for him last year, actually. This time, I think the swirls happened a little bit better. Last time, like, it didn't really swirl. It just all sank. The chocolate and the raspberry kind of sank to the bottom. And it was
I remember.
The cheesecake layer floating on top of the chocolate raspberry layer. This time, the chocolate kind of stayed on top, but the raspberry got a little bit swirled around. I got to work on my swirl technique. But it tasted really good, and everybody loved it except for Lucy, who's just really not a cream cheese fan.
She's never had cheese before, and so being exposed to cream cheese right off the bat, it's a thing you gotta get used to.
I did not like cream cheese until after I'd had my first baby, so she's got some time. I'm just gonna say, something about having babies like changed my relationship with sour, because I did not like yogurt, sour cream cheese. Like, all of that sour dairy stuff was just not something I was at all interested in. And now I love it all. I love yogurt. I love sour cream. I'm like eating the sour cream off the spoon now. And I hated sour cream when I was younger.
It's interesting that I wonder how many women have had changed like tastes in food after giving birth, and what kinds of changes there have been. That would be
interesting. It could just be a getting older thing. Like I can't definitively prove that it has to do with babies and not just being,
you were pretty old.
Shut up. What?
Especially by the time you had Anthony, you were like technically, what do they call it? Like technically,
advanced maternal age.
Advanced maternal age.
Which, like, basically means you're
35.
You're over 30. Over 35 is advanced maternal age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They need to update their stuff.
Also, over 4 kids is grand multipara.
Grand. You are the grand multipara.
Yeah. I love that. It makes me feel like grand. I'm a grand multipara.
I'm typing that in now. Grand multipara. That's going to be our title of this episode. So Anthony's birthday, and then we had Chinese food for dinner. He requested Chinese food, so we had that delivered. Yeah. And that was fine. I am fine with that. I like Chinese food.
They kind of messed up my
They
order.
Messed up. Well, yeah, they didn't have the shumai that you wanted, so no, they didn't deliver that.
I was sad.
And then the chicken, sweet and sour chicken, was not what you thought it was going to be.
No, I was expecting like the dish with the onions vegetables and the peppers and pineapple in a sauce.
It was chicken fingers with sweet and sour sauce.
Yeah, I got
on the side.
I got a bunch of chicken fingers sweet and sour dipping sauce.
In fact, we thought that they had forgotten your order, because I thought that the chicken fingers were part of the boo-boo platter.
It was mildly disappointing.
That was a little disappointing. The other stuff, I mean, this place has been pretty good so far, but we don't have any local places to deliver that I want to get food from, because we've had bad experiences with the one that's closest to us. So the other thing that's big this week, not that didn't happen to us, but happened to your family, was the Texas snowpocalypse.
Yes,
I'm sure everybody knows about Texas getting walloped.
My family all live in Texas. I'm the only one who doesn't live in state. I'm from Texas. My parents lost power for several days, and it got down to 47 in their house, and I was getting a little bit nervous. Although their hot water heater was working, so they could get hot-ish water out of the taps.
Even without the power?
Yeah, they have a gas hot water heater.
I guess the pilot didn't go out. It's not electrically activated.
It's not an electric fan.
Because there were some people who had like gas heaters, but it was electric, like had an electric blower or various.
Right. Companies. I mean, their heater wasn't working.
Right. But the water was.
But the hot water heater was working. So they did not lose water, and they bundled up. They ate cold food. They piled a bunch of blankets on their bed. My mom sent me pictures of Dad in his parka. And my dad walked to Mass because he's stubborn like that. Because
the roads were plows in Austin, so the roads were covered in snow and you couldn't drive on them.
Right, the roads were too icy to drive. My dad's from Illinois, and he's just kind of...
Southern Illinois, which means out in the farm country.
Yeah, he's from...
He's a farm boy.
He's from a very small town.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he decided to walk to church, and he was like, I kind of worried at them, like, are you sure, you know, you shouldn't go hang out with one of the brothers? Like, one of my brothers and his wife live like a mile away from my parents, and they didn't lose power. So I was like, why don't you go over to Tim and Amber's house? And like, but no, they're like, we're fine. We're fine. It's not that cold. I mean, it's cold, but we're fine.
That's the generation. We're fine. Nothing wrong.
We can
survive it.
So yeah, my brother Tim and his wife never lost power. And in fact, their neighbor did lose power. Like, they watched and heard the transformer blow. And so they just fed an extension cord over the fence to give their neighbors power. And my other brother did lose power and lost water. My sister's... The family she lives with. She
lives in Dallas area.
Yeah. They did lose power, but they had a small generator so that they plugged a space heater into a small generator and like heated one room of their house, and everyone just...
And it was rolling blackouts, like the power would come on, go off.
Right. My sister had rolling blackouts. My parents had just like... It was supposed to be rolling blackout, but they just lost power for 2 days.
I can't imagine, like, because... Everybody, like, we had that experience a few years ago where we lost power from a storm and you were in the hospital.
But it wasn't as cold.
It wasn't when it was mid-March, but it was warmer. Right. It wasn't as cold. They got down to zero. I mean, they were cold for even here would have been cold.
Right.
And we were able to go to my sister's house where there was no problem. They didn't lose power or anything like that. So. Yeah, I can't imagine being in a situation where everybody's the same way. And all the stores are closed, so you can't go and get food or medicine or anything. I mean, I can't imagine.
But it seems like my family's neighbors were all really good. Like, they were sharing what they had with others and taking care of their neighbors. And I was just really impressed with how well everybody kind of pulls together in disasters like that.
Yeah, I think that would be the same in most places, like, that I know of. I mean, even around here, it was similar. Like in 78, the blizzard of 78 here, it was the same sort of thing. Yeah. You know, the story about the delivery girl who ended up getting, she was delivering groceries. Her car got stuck in the...
This isn't from 78. This was from...
In Austin, you read a story.
Yes.
About a delivery girl delivering groceries to this family, and her car got stuck in the driveway. The tow truck... there was no tow trucks. So she ended up staying with them for 5 days, this, like, delivery girl.
Right.
They kind of adopted her.
They took her in. They fed her. One of the things that she delivered was their Valentine's Day steaks. And so they shared their steak with her, and she made them a coconut cake. And it was a very heartwarming story. Just,
yeah, people being good to people.
Unfortunately, not everyone had a great experience. And I've heard at least one story of a family whose house burned down and the kids grandmother died. And I've heard stories of people being found frozen in their cars. So
I remember
praying for all of them.
78, one of the teachers in our high school at the time died of carbon monoxide poisoning in her car because they got buried in the car and they were running the engine to stay warm.
Oh, so
I remember that. It was all the kids were really upset. So, yeah. So the snowpocalypse, but we've been fine. We get a little snow.
It's been a pretty snowy winter here, though. We've had...
nowhere near 2015, of course.
No, but lots of consistent, like, small storms.
Small storms,
That dump several inches, and then a little bit of it melts off the top, but it's not completely gone. So it's been snowier than above average in terms of snowiness.
In the past month, we've had, like... Once a week, we got like 2, 3, 4 inches, 5 inches, you know, just enough that you have to go out and shovel it and you got to, you know, pile it up. But other than that, it's not been too bad. And it sounds like it's going to warm up. So that's the snowpocalypse. Other things I've been doing today, I started building my Lego Saturn V rocket, which I, after building the Lego Lunar Lander last fall, I had so much fun doing that. And it occurred to me at the time, and I think I mentioned this before, this is like model kits. This is like model kits of old, except I don't have that smelly glue to put things together, and you don't have to paint it. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy it, and the kids enjoy watching me do it because they like doing their Legos. So I enjoy that. And then so I did that partly.
While you were building Legos, I was I was watercoloring.
Yes, very, very beautiful watercolors. Note cards that you're going to send to people?
Postcards and note cards, yeah.
Cool.
And
very talented. Nice way to spend a Sunday afternoon just doing some creative things.
Very relaxing.
The kids, meanwhile, were watching Star Wars, Clone Wars in the office.
And then building Legos.
And then of course, immediately afterward, they had to go build Legos that have to do with what they just watched, which is awesome. And then I spent a little time this afternoon with your mom and brother.
Kind of weird.
Using the Oculus Quest, the VR headset. We were testing out like chat rooms where we could go in and sit together. And it was really kind of, it was like mind bending because there's these avatars you see, and there's the avatar of your mom, and there's an avatar of your brother Tim, and I'm there, and we're sitting. First, we were in a really beautiful like study library, like a city mansion sort of thing, and then we were in on a tropical beach, and then we were in Yosemite Valley, you know, sitting on rocks around a stream, and it was surreal. It really was surreal. And then we tried to do some other things, and we were just testing it out and the capabilities and stuff. The VR has been pretty amazing, I have to say. It's really, the possibilities are mind-bending. So that was fun. Let's move on to talk about, this past week was Ash Wednesday, of course.
It was.
And so on Tuesday, Mardi Gras, Shrove Tuesday, we decided to sometimes called Pancake Tuesday. So that's what we did. We had pancakes and bacon for dinner.
We did.
We did that a few years ago for the first time. And that was a hit. We didn't do it last year. I don't know why. I forget why we didn't do it last year. But for some, we just didn't think of it, I guess. And then this year we did it again. But Ben wanted to help me with the pancakes.
Right.
So now the last couple of times I've made pancakes, Ben has pitched in, which is good. And that went well. There's nothing remarkable about the pancakes. I've talked about my pancake recipe before. But Friday we had shrimp tacos again.
We did.
You came up with a quick Mexican rice hack that was really good. Like, this tasted like Mexican rice from a restaurant, and it was all like leftovers and canned stuff.
Yes. I've tried it before, but this was more successful. So I had a container of leftover rice, like a quart of leftover rice, just in the fridge. And I heated up some oil and leftover chicken schmaltz in a pan.
Chicken schmaltz, in case you don't know, is chicken fat.
Right. So after we roast chicken, we pour the drippings into a container in the fridge. The fat floats on top and the brothy part is on the bottom. And the fat, chicken fat, is really tasty. And so I fried the rice for a little bit in a mixture of olive oil and chicken fat. And then I poured in some of the chicken broth, like the dripping part, and some salsa. And
right. You were going to, instead, last time you used Rotel, but that didn't have enough flavor.
The Rotel wasn't flavorful enough. Yeah. I really wanted salsa. So we had a little bit of paces left, and then you went to the store and bought some, like, whatever, Tostitos salsa. This was not great salsa.
No.
And then I added like a sprinkling, like maybe half a teaspoon of chili powder on top of it to add a little bit of smoky and spice. It was so good.
It was as good as any like Mexican restaurant Mexican rice I've had. I was blown away.
And I didn't like have to like cut up any tomatoes or onions or any of that. Like
there was no cutting involved in this. There was a can opening involved, like jar opening. That'd be can opening.
Right.
Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, it's just a
chicken fat, though, is magic.
I mean, that's why the Jewish cooks, you know, when they use the schmaltz to make all kinds of food, they knew what they were doing. I mean, like bacon fat is really good for cooking certain things. Chicken fat is also really good.
And of course, this chicken fat is usually off of the chicken thighs that we've roasted. And so I'm roasting them with like herbs and spices. And so the drippings are already pre-seasoned.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's one of the things that makes
sage
it so good.
Oregano or whatever, or sage and cumin and some other things.
Oregano, thyme,
yeah.
Onion and garlic powder, that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yep. Really good. Really good. So give it a shot. Give it a try. It's...
And the shrimp tacos are so good, too.
Oh, yeah. Really simple.
We didn't have any normal cabbage for the cabbage slaw this time. We just had a head of bok choy, so I went ahead and made...
No, Napa cabbage.
Oh, Napa cabbage. That's right.
Right.
So I made Napa cabbage slaw, and it was fine.
It worked out. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little wet this time, a little moisture-y.
That's because it had the juice of a whole lime in it.
Well, okay.
It was really limey.
It was really limey. But it was good. It was good. And the kids like it, most of them. The predictable ones who don't like spicy stuff don't. So I actually kept some of the shrimp out of the, I didn't coat them in spice for Bella so that she could have non-spicy shrimp.
Right.
But I bet she should have put the tartar sauce on it. Like, I mentioned last time. These kids are crazy for tartar sauce now. I have to keep making like the homemade tartar sauce. But she should have put tartar sauce on hers.
I bet she would have liked that.
She would have liked that. All right. So that's what we've been eating. Other meals have been, we had quiche one night. Lucy helped you make those.
Yes. She really liked the quiche. She was very happy about that. Mm. And she had so much fun helping me make it, which of course I think
that's part of why she liked the quiche.
Right. Well, in the past, even though she couldn't eat the like actual quiche, I've made her like just the filling without the eggs and dairy.
Mm-hmm.
And she has liked that. So I reminded her of that. Like, you like this filling because you've had it before. And she's like, oh yeah, I have. And then that plus like helping to cook it was totally sealed the deal.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what we've been eating. Let's talk about what we've been reading or watching. So I watched, actually, this is a couple of weeks ago. I forgot to mention it last time. I watched John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum.
What is that?
So John Wick is a series of movies starring Keanu Reeves.
Okay.
And he is a former hitman for hire who's called Baba Yaga because whoever wrote the script did not realize that Baba Yaga was an old witch woman.
What?
Whoever wrote the script must have thought that Baba Yaga was the boogeyman, was like the Russian word for boogeyman, and didn't realize that Baba Yaga is a witch.
It means like grandma witch.
Yeah, grandma witch.
Like, well, that's Dragonona, but I mean Baba.
Well, Yaga. But in Russian, I think it actually means the same thing.
Right. Okay. Anyway, she's Baba Yaga is like a character out of Russian folktales. Yeah,
whose house has chicken legs that walked around.
Yes. And she flies around in a mortar and pestle.
Yeah, but yet this, you know, the top assassin in the world. And it posits, it's very cartoonish. It posits that there's this society of assassins who operate. There's this whole underworld of assassins who operate almost in the open. And they have like all these rules and laws and this whole bureaucracy and infrastructure. And it's very cartoonish in that sense. And the first one was pretty good. It centers around he had retired and got married, and then his wife had died of, I think, an illness, and all he had left of her was their dog. And then some guys broke into his house and killed his dog. And it turns out that these guys were, one of them was the son of a Russian mobster and didn't realize who he was. They were getting revenge on him for some traffic incident or something like that. It was something stupid. And they didn't realize who they were attacking. And so then he goes on the rampage.
Right.
And so the first one was, you know, as far as action, violent action movies goes, it was pretty good. Then there's a second one. I'm not even sure exactly what the second one was about, but they kind of flow from one to the other. So much so that this one begins with no explanation. It begins in media res, in the middle of the action that ended the last movie. There's no explanation of who these people are, what's going on. It's just the next scene.
That's weird.
It was kind of bizarre. And it's in each one, of course, with these movies, each one has to get more over the top in the violence and action and stuff. And some of it was just so gross. I turned my head. You know, I mean, just like some of it was pretty bad. I like Keanu Reeves. Really enjoy him in almost anything. Who is the Lance Reddick is in it. He's really great. I watch him in anything. So there was some good stuff to it. A few good things. Lawrence Fishburne was in it.
Uh-huh.
There's some really good actors in it. But it was super violent and just one long extended sequence of violence.
Right.
And the guy who plays the new Iron Chef in like the Food Network's Iron Chef.
Uh-huh.
The American version, the guy who plays the head of the Academy, it's an actor who plays like the head of the Iron Chef Academy, but okay. he was in it as one of the bad guys. So that was amusing. But Parabellum comes from the Latin phrase, if you want peace, prepare for war. Parabellum means prepare for war.
Oh, parabellum.
Sorry. I said it like I'm from Boston. Parabellum.
You said it like it's one word.
It is.
Okay.
Parabellum is used. It's also used of, there's a kind of a gun, a round for a gun called a parabellum round.
Okay.
They're doing it as a play on words. Anyway, so that was that. But you and I also watched Good Will Hunting.
We did.
That's because I'm preparing for an episode of Secrets of Movies and TV Shows in which I will be discussing Good Will Hunting with Father Chip Hines and Andrew Hermes. I think is Andrew with us? Yes, I think it's Andrew. So that should be interesting. But you and I watched it, and I hadn't watched this in 15 years, probably.
I don't think I've watched it for a long time. I mean, I owned it. Back when we had VHS tapes,
It's in a box somewhere.
I definitely owned this on VHS, and I've seen it a number of times. I was one of my favorites.
So as someone from Boston, this, uh-huh. I think I approached this movie differently than people from elsewhere.
Probably.
But this movie, and I don't know if people remember this, this movie is really kind of what started the trend of Boston movies over the past 20 years. All these movies set in Boston, especially South Boston as a character almost in all of these movies, and The Departed and Black Mass and all these movies from that were in Boston. What was the one with the late night guy and Drew Barrymore? And
have no idea.
It ended at Fenway Park. Yeah, there was all these movies that were set in Boston, but this was the original that really kind of set the tone. And it was interesting because it has all the lines. How do you like them apples? You know, but I really liked the movie, and I'll obviously go into more detail on this when I talk on the Secrets of Movies. But I really loved the message of, you've been given a gift from God, and how dare you waste it, throw it away, because you don't want people to think you're being uppity. You know, there's a certain amount of pride, like false humility, when you. I'm going to stay down among you guys, even though I could rise up and do something with this gift. It's almost patronizing, condescending.
Right.
And his buddy calls him on it, which is great.
That's one of my favorite scenes, I have to say, that when Chucky calls Will on it and just says, if you don't, I will kill you.
if you and I are here when we're 50 years old, still doing this, I will kill you. He says,
as only a best friend can.
Right. You know, my dream is that someday I'm going to walk up to your door, knock on it, and you're just going to be gone. That's the Irish goodbye I was telling you about.
Right.
Yeah. You don't say goodbye. You're just gone.
I love the it's a very character driven movie, and it's.
I had totally forgot Stellan Skarsgård was in it.
Really?
I totally forgot his character. Like, his character is important, but it wasn't what stuck with me.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the Robin Williams character, Sean Maguire, Will.
That's one of Robin Williams, one of my favorite performances of his. I love that.
It's so multi-layered. I mean, it's fascinating that this screenplay was written by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck before they had done anything, when they were 22 years old or whatever.
I've read some conspiracy theories that are like, well, they obviously didn't write it. They stole it from someone because there's no way that they could have written this.
Yes, there's the old. Yeah, there's the reason you didn't write, you couldn't have made this is because I think so low of you.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. They have neither of them have written anything of such quality since. You know, and although they haven't written things together since, I don't think. And maybe they sat down and they worked it out for 5 years or 10 years or whatever the heck it was.
Right.
You know, and it was like, and some people just have one great
story
in them.
That's true. I mean, look at like To Kill a Mockingbird, Harper Lee. I mean, she had a story.
Right. I mean, she wrote other things that weren't as good. But yeah, this was the great thing. I agree.
And, what was I going to say?
Minnie Driver.
Oh, I really like her.
She was really good in this. I like Minnie Driver. She was in so many good things. What was the one where the heart transplant one? Return to Me.
That was a good Minnie Driver movie.
Where's she gone? I haven't seen her in anything in years. Interesting. Yeah, great movie. I loved Robin Williams as like the wounded healer.
Right.
That was what was so great about it. I didn't buy his Boston accent at all.
Well, yeah. I
nobody has a good Boston accent unless you're from here. But in fact, I would love to find somebody who does a good Boston accent who's not from Boston. That's believable. Worst one ever, Benedict Cumberbatch in Black Mass. I think it was Black Mass. Sort of
part. I never saw that.
Oh my gosh. It was the worst ever. So awful. It was like, before that, it was Holly Hunter in the movie Once Around. I think it was from the 80s. That was second worst.
I actually ended up stumbling upon a YouTube channel recently where a British therapist like analyzes scenes from movies. And he sort of went through all of the different therapy scenes in Good Will Hunting and kind of talked about what was going on in them, like from a therapy point of view.
I need you to help me find that before I do my recording.
I really liked it. And I ended up watching a whole bunch of these guys. He also did a whole bunch of commentaries on Breakfast Club.
Which you also recently talked about.
And I really liked it, like about a lot of the Good Will Hunting. He was like, I would not have necessarily made this call, but it worked. And bottom line is, you know, if it works, well, if it works
and it's ethical.
Well, there is at least one unethical thing that Sean does.
When he grabs him by the throat.
Yes, that totally crosses the line. Although he had an interesting analysis of sort of what was going on there, which was, again, good.
I loved where he tells him, you know, look, because Will does the whole thing all the time where he analyzes everything. He thinks he's like Sherlock Holmes. He has insights into everything. But he's like, you've read all this in books. You're able to do all this stuff because you've read it in a book. But you haven't done anything. You haven't been anywhere. You haven't lived, you know, you've never left Boston. You know?
Which, but he does it in a way that doesn't like sneer at him for not having lived.
Yeah.
There's a sort of
go do these things.
Right. It's very compassionate and it's very loving. It's just like, you're young and I'm not going to be angry at you for being young, but I'm also, my goal as a therapist is to help you to live life and not be stuck and scared and afraid to live. And it really is more about like, you can't just live your life by reading books. You have to get out there and actually do things with your life. Mm-hmm. And so while it seems like sort of on the surface, like kind of a put down, it was really much more about building him up than putting him down.
Right.
I really loved that.
In a way, only a guy from the old neighborhood could do.
Right.
That was the difference, that he was the one therapist who could get through to him because, you know, he was from the old neighborhood.
And because he had himself suffered.
Right. The suffering was a big part of it. And compassion, to suffer, literally means to suffer with. And because he had suffered, he could get through to Will.
Right. The scene where Will just breaks down and like cries on his shoulder while he just holds him.
Because he keeps telling him, it's not your fault. It's not your fault.
That is one of my favorite scenes in any movie ever. It's beautiful. And it's really, it gets into...
Oh, and Matt Damon does such a great job in that scene, in that
right,
like break that you can see the walls coming down little by little as he says it, you know, and he goes through various stages of yeah, whatever. And then he gets angry at one point and then just it breaks through finally. And he can, you know, feel it, you know, feel the love from Sean.
and feel all the hurt and things that he's been bottling away for all this time.
Right. Express that. So what a great movie.
It's a great movie.
Now, I got to point out, there's a lot of bad language in it.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
I was a little shocked to recall how much bad language is in it. So just, you know, be prepared for that. Don't watch it with your younger kids. So, all right. So I haven't finished a book this week. I'm still working my way through the latest Dresden Files. I think I'm taking it slower than I would otherwise because I know there's no Dresden after this.
That makes sense. I understand that.
I'm halfway through it, but, yeah. And every once in a while I yell from the other room like, oh, Melanie, this thing is, this right. line is so funny.
Right. I finished The Corner That Held Them. And it was...
Which you talked about last week.
Which I talked about last week. It was really good. It ended very abruptly. Just ended. Hmm. Like, no conclusion, no winding things up. It's just kind of...
I'm done writing this.
Done. But it really, that kind of fit with what the book was. Because it really feels like it's a chronicle. And sometimes, you know, medieval chronicles, they just kind of, they end.
Right.
And I liked it. So overall, definitely 2 thumbs up. So I started Death Comes for the Archbishop this week.
By Willa Cather.
Willa Cather. It is a classic. 1927, I think, novel. And for years, people have been saying, this is a classic. You should read it. I really love this book. And I have to say, my impression of what this novel was totally off base. I mean, maybe it's just the title, Death Comes for the Archbishop, and knowing that it's kind of a classic, I just had this idea of, like, it's going to be sort of a deathbed story told in flashbacks, maybe with some action, but it's going to be very slow and meditative. And that's not what it is at all. If I had known what kind of book it was, it's much more, at least in the first, like, section where I'm reading, it's like kind of adventure story.
Yeah.
So it's about... The United States has just annexed New Mexico and Arizona after winning the war with Spain. And so the novel opens with 3 cardinals and a bishop in Rome having dinner. And the bishop talks these 3 cardinals into picking his appointment for the new bishop of Santa Fe, New Mexico. They were going to go with a Spaniard or a Mexican, because, of course, this has been Spanish territory. And this bishop, who is French and is from, like, Ohio, picks this priest who is also born in France, but he has been a missionary priest in Ohio, like riding the circuit in the Great Lakes area. And so this is a priest who was born in France and has a typical French taste for, like, the fine things in life. But he's been living roughing it on the frontier in America. And so he's sent to New Mexico. It takes him a couple years to get from Ohio to Santa Fe. I mean, he has to go, like, down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico and then across Texas. He, like, gets shipwrecked. He breaks a leg and has to recuperate from it. And as the novel proper opens, he is riding through the desert in New Mexico on a horse, and he's lost and he doesn't have any water, and he's almost, like, on the verge of hallucinating, and he's not sure if he's going to make it. And then he stumbles across a small ranch farm. Like, he finds water, and there's this family who haven't seen a priest in years, and they're, like, so far off the beaten path. And they're like, you can do weddings and baptisms, and here are confessions and confirmations and all the sacraments. And they're so excited to see him. And it's really about this bishop's attempt to bring the faith to a place where they've technically had Spanish missionaries for several hundred years, but most of the people are just kind of lost. What faith they have is sort of the vestigial. And he's just tireless in bringing their faith. And then there's the beautiful culture clashes where he has another French priest with him, and they're just like, more beans, more stewed mutton. They're like, we want some real French food. We need a garden so we can have some salad. But it's a really great novel, and I can't believe it's taken me this long to read it. But
so on that note, there will be a link in the show notes, of course, as we usually do to the book. But if you become a patron of SQPN, I'll give you a little pitch here. There are some thank you gifts that we give, and one of the possible thank you gifts that you can choose is Death Comes from the Archbishop. So if you become a patron at $10 or more a month, we'll send you
a free copy
if you choose that. So it sounds like it's well worth the reading. So
I highly recommend.
Awesome.
So for Lent this year, I've decided to try to read some of the books off my shelf. And then to read some of the classics that I haven't read before, like Death Comes for the Archbishop. So one of the books off my shelf that I've bought and then not actually read
until now
is The Memoirs of St. Peter. It's a new translation of The Gospel According to Mark by Michael Pakaluk. I hope I'm saying that right. Yeah, the Gospel of Mark is traditionally believed to be St. Mark writing down St. Peter's...
his homilies in Rome. They're basically sermon notes from St. Peter's homilies in Rome when he gets there.
Right. So one of the things that Michael Pakaluk tries to do in this translation is to really capture the interesting quirks of Mark's gospel that really reflect Peter's voice. And so for one thing, a lot of the gospel goes back and forth between present tense and past tense. And the present tense really has this feeling of immediacy, like somebody talking. It's conversational in tone. And so he, rather than cleaning it up like most translators do, where they just change it all to past tense because that's what we expect this kind of narrative to be, all in past tense, Michael Pakaluk instead tries to capture those quirks of the language.
Yeah, I mean, it's very conversational in style. Like, here's just a sample. So we went through the whole of Galilee, preaching in the synagogues there and expelling devils. So a leper comes out to him, and beseeching him and falling to his knees, he says to him, "If you so will, you can make me clean." Well, Jesus was keenly affected, and reaching out his hand, touched him. So he says to him, "I do so will, be clean." Well, his leprosy was gone immediately. He became clean. I mean, you can just picture the guy sitting across the table from you telling the story.
Right. This is a really delightful translation, and it's got extensive notes for each chapter that really look at the meaning of the phrases, and it really goes into, again, making it immediate, capturing the meaning of the literal meaning of the idioms and how those literal meanings really change the dynamics of what's going on.
It kind of does in narrative or literary form what the TV show The Chosen does in the visual form, the acted out form, the theater, shall we say. And because that's one of the things that really strikes people about that is it makes Jesus approachable, relatable. He's real. A lot of the times you've seen Jesus in movies, he's been sort of ethereal, whether it's John Caviezel in, Passion of the Christ, or, he's at a remove, for one thing, and that's all in Aramaic is the word, I'm trying to think of the word, Aramaic, the Jesus of Nazareth, where, Max von Sydow is all like, oh, very, removed from the world and ethereal, but this is, Jesus is just real. It's like, and so Peter here is very real.
Yeah, I really, it's a book that you have to go through slowly. And I'm finding I'm going through it better if I'm reading it and like reading bits of it out loud to somebody else, because it's kind of.
Well, like I just read, it sounds like a conversation.
Right. And the notes are just phenomenal. Like the notes on today's gospel were just like pulling out all sorts of little details. Things that I would never have picked up on my own, or that you can't pick up in the normal English translation, because the translator has made choices about how to which phrases to use in English, and things are lost mm-hmm. in any translation. And so what right. he's trying to do is to capture those nuances that are lost to make it. This is about as close as you can get to reading the Greek if you don't know Greek.
Right. But putting it in terms that work for modern idiom. Yeah.
Right.
You have a passage there you wanted to look at?
Right. There was.
Well.
Anyway, I can't yeah. find the passage I was thinking of.
Okay. But, you know, obviously we recommend it. It sounds like a great book. You know, it's something that could be incorporated into your Lent, your Easter. You know, so, yeah, really good. It's something you could do a read aloud with the kids, which are you doing it as a read aloud?
I haven't been. Although I have read some sections of it. I know Isabella has picked it up and has been reading it on her own. I found it in her room several times. That is pretty high praise. Like the 14-year-old is grabbing it and taking it to her room to read. So, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. So we want to wind things up tonight with a little bit last discussion about what we're doing with the kids for nighttime prayer before bed. Since they were little, we've pretty much done basically the same thing. We sit down in the living room. We turn the lights down low to help them focus. We say a prayer for, you know, that God would be with them over the night and help them sleep. Well, although we've changed that, actually, because they're not babies anymore. You know, God would watch over them. And then we pray, you know, Our Father, Hail Mary, Glory Be, Act of Contrition. We pray for the souls in purgatory, pray for our priests and bishops and deacons and seminarians and the religious. And then we have our personal intentions, and each kid has who they want to pray for. And then we, you know, so that, or something they want to pray for, whether it's something personal, like an aunt or uncle, or a situation in the world, like the people in North Korea, which Anthony prays for regularly, which is, he has a very interesting sense of the world.
I think Isabella was the first one to do North Korea.
Right. Probably having heard us talking about it at some point.
Right. I think we read about it in history or something.
And then once we went around doing that, then we'll go around doing something we're grateful for. We thank God for today. And that was pretty much it. But you had this idea to start something different with the kids for Lent. Because, to be honest, it got very pro forma. They're not, you know, they're kind of
checking out,
or, you know, grumping and not doing it or whatever, you know, but in any case, I think we needed something new.
I've been wanting to pray night prayer with them for a long time. And I mean, when they were younger, especially, and they couldn't sleep at night, you know, somebody had a nightmare or just couldn't fall asleep, I would usually just read Compline to them.
So night prayer is specifically, or Compline is a prayer from the Liturgy of the Hours, or Divine Office, it's called sometimes. But it's the shortest of the hours.
It's the shortest. It is the traditional last one before going to bed.
Yes.
And so it's very short. You pray one or sometimes two psalms, the Canticle of Simeon, Lord, now you let your servant go in peace, and
a reading.
A short reading, very short reading.
Yes.
And then just like a responsory, and then you end with a Marian hymn.
Yes.
The Marian hymn changes depending on the liturgical season. It's really short. Most of the kids already know at least the Canticle of Simeon and several of the responsorial prayers and the antiphons because I've done it with them since they were little babies.
Right. But even if they didn't know it, we have an iBreviary app on our phones. And we just share it with them and point to the, here, you read this paragraph, here, you read that paragraph. And it worked.
Right. Now that they are all literate and can read, I figured this was a good time to kind of start doing something a little
bit
different.
They were all for it. It worked well. They got into it. I was surprised how well Lucy reads. I was a little shocked. I haven't seen her reading, like, her reading in the just in the past 6 months has gone gangbusters.
Definitely.
I mean, she stumbled over the word reign, like a reign of a king. But other than that, she got it. But she just took her a second to get it. But everything else, she had inflection. Yeah.
Yeah, it went really well. I think I might at some point want to try to figure out how to add back in some of the intentions. Intercessions and thank yous.
Maybe at the responsory.
Maybe. Because evening prayer has a section for intentions.
Yeah.
But night prayer doesn't.
Evening prayer, at this point, it would be a little long for them.
It's too long.
Like, in general, our prayer was about 15 minutes, and I think that works. I know some families pray a family rosary, but that's not really... The attention span is not there for our kids to do a bunch of rote prayers in a row like that. So I don't think that would work. But, yeah, we can add in intentions. I think it would be fine. In fact, I would miss it if we didn't do them anymore.
Right.
I think it's very good to have not just what we're going to pray for, but also what we are thankful for.
You know, and there are a lot of like secular studies that talk about how important gratitude is for just for our general well-being, like focusing on the things that we are thankful for in our life.
Right.
Has just like good mental health benefits. And then, of course, we owe God thanks for everything that we have, and having just a little bit of nudge every day to think about.
Here, take a moment to think about things that you're grateful for, I think is important. Yeah,
very important for
and
all
they
of us.
Sometimes get to hear their siblings say they're grateful for them.
Right. It's really nice when they to hear the various things that they're thankful for. A favorite intention is, you know, thank you, God, for a good dinner.
Yes.
Thank you, God, for a yummy ice cream for dessert sort of things. But sometimes they can be really profound.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't. And that's the big thing is not to expect profound every night or even all that often.
There was a long period of time in which every single night Anthony said, thank you, God, for yummy sky and cookies. And I don't even know. I think it started off as just he was being silly and everyone kind of laughed at like, what does yummy sky mean? And
just misspoke, which he does sometimes.
And we didn't even have cookies. And he just thought it was funny. And so he continued. And rather than trying to fight and tell him, you can't say that, we just said he'll eventually get tired of it. And he did.
Right.
But yeah, yummy sky and cookies.
I think it was like 5 years ago. Sophie couldn't think of who to pray for. And I finally just told her, pray for your Auntie Therese.
Her godmother.
Your godmother, Auntie Teresa. And so now every night, every single night, without exception, without change, without variation, which is very Sophie, she prays for Auntie Tree. patterns, repetition is very much that's her thing. So, routine. I think that should do it. I think that's a good discussion. If I'd love to hear what other people have for their traditions. What do they do with their kids, especially during Lent? If you do anything special, anything different, I'd love to hear about it. So before we go, we'll take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Julie M., Tony S., SB Writing, Barbara G., and Kimberly W. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give. Make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. Now's a great time to become a StarQuest patron. Thanks to a generous gift from a StarQuest supporter, when you start a new Patreon monthly pledge at sqpn.com/give, the first 3 months will be matched by an equal amount from our donor to support all our shows, including this one, making your gift go even further. And we're more than halfway to our goal of $2,000 in new monthly pledges. So once you help us close the gap, if you've been thinking of becoming a StarQuest patron, now's the time. Visit sqpn.com/give today. So, we'd love to hear from you. Like I said, we want to hear your comments and feedback. You can let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. Relevant links from our discussion, including to those books, will be in our show notes at sqpn.com. And if you haven't yet done so, please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or on YouTube at the SQPN YouTube channel, where you should hit the bell to get notifications. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.